Welcome to the Fastcast, your place for up-to-date Slowpokes news. I'm your main host, Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
And I am impressed by John's energy and vigor, Slowpoke number two, David Chalante. How are you?
I pulled it right out, man. It's the name, Fastcast. Fastcast. We're going with a new name because it's fast and it's cast because the off week sounded like
pathetic. And like it was the rejects. Like, hey, this is the stuff we have to sell on discount now because we're too close to the expiry date. That's what off week sounds like.
Wow. Geez. That really does.
Fastcast is fast for two reasons. One, it's shorter so you don't have to waste time out of your busy day picking up kids and doing all the other things that you see in Olay commercials.
Going to shopping.
Yep. And just having headaches. You don't have time for long podcasts.
Eat your probiotic.
I was too nebulous, and then you just hit it right there. Exactly the thing I'm looking for, the probiotics. The other reason that it's fast is because it's up to date.
Yeah.
So this isn't recorded weeks in advance like our normal show is. This is recorded 2 days before release.
Yeah.
So we're flying by the seat of our well-tailored underwear.
Yes. Well, I'm going commando. Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, it's the perfect fit, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Nature's intention. we're here today to talk about some things. What are we here to talk about up front?
So, Spider-Man Homecoming came out, what, like 3 days ago?
I didn't even know it had come out. That's how recently it's been, like, out.
Yeah, no. So, that's very, very new. Some critics have given their, like, preview critiques or whatever on it. But, you know, I don't know how to feel about it because I haven't seen it yet. One thing that I did see in preparing topics for this episode is that the director or someone involved in the production, I don't fucking know who, said that apparently Spider-Man has been in the MCU since Iron Man 2.
What? Where?
Get this right. You'll never believe this one weird fact about the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
In Iron Man 2, there's a bit where Mickey Rourke's character takes over a bunch of robots at the Stark Expo.
Yes, it is very sad because of how bland Mickey Rourke's performance is in that movie. I do recall that sort of blank and then robots.
Yes. So when the robots all activate and get controlled and start becoming evil.
Evil robots, yeah.
There's a little kid in the audience and he's wearing an Iron Man mask, I think.
Yes.
And he steps forward and is just like, I'm brave. Kind of that whole perky little kid type thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, some dude told some dude who told some dude in an interview that that's Peter Parker. And that's fucking bullshit.
Why does that make you so mad? Why does that make you... There's some people shouting off some nonsense.
Look, I know that it's innocuous, and I know that by getting angry about it, I am playing into the exact hype engine that they want me to. They want me to jump on Facebook and rant about this and all that kind of...
Part of the machine, David.
But there are two reasons why that makes no fucking sense at all. First, there is no way that Marvel, at that point, knew that in, like, exactly 8 years or whatever the fuck it was, that Spider-Man would return to the MCU and be the exact correct age for that distance. This is clearly fucking retconning. There's no way somebody planned that or planted that in the script. If anything, and if they were going to have a secret Spider-Man cameo, he would have been Peter Parker's age appropriate for the universe at that time.
Yeah?
Second, Peter Parker would not stand up to that robot because he has no fucking superpowers and he has not had the inciting incident of Uncle Ben dying yet.
Yeah, he should be the timid nerd that we all know and love.
He's the one who's getting wedgies at fucking school and nerding out in science and all the bullies are laughing at him and Mary Jane doesn't notice him yet. That's the character at that moment. He's not robots. I'm going to stand up to it like that girl in front of the bull.
Well, they have, apparently from what I've seen, they have changed up like the story of Spider-Man and, like, how it's arranged.
Okay.
Mostly because, like, what is it? I think the phrase that I'm saying as I roll my eyes is a hot Aunt May.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if they go into what happens to Uncle Ben. It's not traditional origin story.
Uncle Ben, in Civil War, there's an exchange between Stark and Spider-Man that indicates that Uncle Ben has died well before that.
Right.
He talks about, like, as Peter's all like, you know, when you have powers like I do and you don't use them, bad things happen.
Sure.
And so, like, he's like, yep, Uncle Ben is what he's talking about there.
Okay.
That's good old Uncle Ben.
Yeah, I mean, like, why wouldn't you, though? If you could, I guess you could retcon that to be Peter Parker. Why not? Like, maybe all the children are going to be other children.
What annoys me about it is that it's like, the universe is so connected already, you don't have to force it. You know what I mean? And especially of all of the movies that you want to tie your one to, Iron Man 2.
Yeah, which is the worst.
It's the worst one.
Well, I mean, it's trying to... Thor, the original Thor, are really fighting for that spot.
I think the original Thor is much better than Iron Man 2.
Okay. But yeah, it's probably one of the... It's at the bottom. It's on the bottom tier. Yeah, that's for sure.
Look, I don't know. Like, I'm probably going to go see Spider-Man. This is completely unrelated to my frustration with this stupid, like, marketing tactic. I'm going to go see Spider-Man, but I don't imagine at this point it's going to be a Guardians, you know?
No, I'm going to go see Spider-Man because it's got Michael Keaton in it.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I got to keep reminding myself of that. He's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be Michael Keaton. He's going to be walking around the place, Michael Keaton it up.
Yeah, he's going to have a bravura performance. He's going to have a lot of screen presence and a lot of energy. And as much as I might dislike Birdman, I'm going to go this and be happy that he's playing a Birdman.
Yeah, literally. Now he's finally the Birdman we all hope and dream.
Yeah. No, this is going to be... That'll be good. I can look forward to that.
I mean, that's honestly the only reason why I'd go see it. I liked the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, you know?
Yeah, no, they're so good.
I liked them. I liked the first one. I liked the second one. I even don't mind emo Spider-Man, right? Like, it's fine.
Honest to God, that's like one of the best points in that movie. Like, I mean, a lot of people hate it, but the whole point is it's supposed to make you hate it. Yeah, like, it's such a perfect...
He's the most hateable person.
Yeah, it is a perfect scene. And like, I think Movie Bob is, I'm stealing this from, but what's perfect about it is that it's not cool. It's what Peter thinks cool looks like.
Which is not cool.
Yeah, which is not cool. And I was reading, like, just earlier today, Film Crit Hulk did a Twitter thread about why a bunch of people don't like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. And he boiled it down to what he thinks is basically the idea that in most superhero films, you get the person in there and they're cool and they're awesome or whatever. And so you've got like this cool nerd and he's like, he knows his shit and he knows like indie art. Because nerdism is quite cool now, and that's what cool nerdism is, right? Yeah. Whereas Sam Raimi is less interested in making the superhero character awesome as he is making the superhero character human. And Peter is incredibly flawed and is that... writing of the character is perfectly embodied by how Tobey Maguire plays him.
Yeah.
And the weird faces that he makes and the fact that he, like, cries in public and stuff like that, that, like, it isn't inherently shameful, but it does make us uncomfortable because it's very...
Human
and very vulnerable in an unglamorous kind of way.
It's definitely
and, like,
unglamorous. He's not the wisecrack... He's not so much of the wisecracking Spider-Man.
Yeah, and then you have that whole thing about, like, he puts on the suit and that's when he's, like... kissing people, hanging upside down in alleys. And that's where he's cracking wise and making jokes. Whereas when he doesn't have the mask on, he's really deferential and really self-conscious. And, like, that's a fun dynamic. And it sounds so, like, cliche to just say it like that. But I think that's part of why when I say, like, I'll go and see it, but it's not going to be Guardians 2. It's just kind of like the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans are just so good.
Also, I saw them when I was, like, growing up.
Yeah.
So along with episode one, which is my other... episode one's the real secret one. I love that movie, but only because I was a child.
Yeah, see, the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans are genuinely and, like, measurably good films.
It's a good coincidence, yes. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't hurt. Add some extra sauce.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm honestly getting real fatigue. Like, I don't see them in the cinema very often.
Just Marvel movies
in general. I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2, even though I've heard it's good.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, excited.
Yeah. You, I think, would like Guardians 2 because it's directed by James Gunn, who seems like your kind of director.
Yeah, and I liked 1 as well, and I thought it was fun, and I loved the soundtrack as well, you know, and it's used to its full effect. And the new Thor looks interesting to me.
It looks like a departure, and that's what's interesting about it.
I love the Thor movies because...
I also... If to anybody who's seen the Ghostbusters reboot, you know what I'm talking about here. But Chris Hemsworth is just a fucking good actor when he's not playing Thor. Like, when he's playing Thor, he's doing the job. But when he's let off the chain... That guy has so much charisma.
See, I think he's even a better Thor when he's not in a Thor movie. As soon as he has all the other characters to contrast with in the MCU and all those other actors and stuff like that, where he's with Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, he is better.
Yeah, and when they're given like witty dialogue and stuff that he can deliver, and he's got a good sense of comedic timing and all that kind of
thing. So the idea of putting him in that weird, strange world with the Hulk and shit, right? That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's going to give him a lot more room. Like, one of the criticisms, the legitimate criticisms I saw of the Ghostbusters reboot was that I think, I forget who was saying it, but they're basically saying, I think that they were surprised by how good Chris Hemsworth is in this, because it feels like in the third act, they just kind of made up scenes so they could watch him do shit. Like, they just spend a little bit too much time on Hemsworth, and he's great, but they spend too much time on him in the end. Yeah, I don't know, Spider-Man!
See if you want, or don't.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
We might talk about that later, who knows?
Who knows?
So what else have we got? Games Done Quick is just wrapping up, I think, as we record this. So Games Done Quick is awesome. Most of you probably know what that is. Speedrunning event.
Yep.
Twice a year, raise money for charity. And just on the really weirdly off chance you don't know what speedrunning is, speedrunning is basically trying to complete a video game is as fast as possible using every cheap trick you can to get to that point. So glitches and exploits and wall, yeah, like clipping through, yeah, bugs, all that kind of stuff. Like just and sometimes a game won't have any, and it's just about getting to the end quickly. Like speedrunning Breath of the Wild, I think at this point they don't have any glitches for that. It's just go to the end as fast as you can and then fight the boss massively underpowered.
Yeah. Speedrunning and watching speedrunning has actually taken a place in where waking up on a Saturday morning and watching bowls used to be.
Yeah.
Right? I will watch it if it appears. So if I'm on YouTube and it comes into up next, or I see someone link to it, I'll put it on and I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it. I've watched some Dark Forces. I think it also taps into it because it's a lot of classic older games as well.
Yeah, they have a really good mix for Games Done Quick. Yeah. And they will have stuff from the NES era, and that really capitalizes on the kind of nostalgia our show shamelessly exploits. and also more recent stuff. Like I said, Breath of the Wild, I'm pretty sure is featured.
That's pretty fresh, yeah. And I don't know, there's something about, I just appreciate when someone does something well.
Yeah.
And I think that if you play games and you understand the language of games, you can watch someone speedrun and you can be like, oh, I can see what they're doing and how they're breaking the game.
There's a bit of a cliche, a bit of a meme-ish thing going on at the moment. For this one, I've seen it very briefly for previous ones, but I've noticed it the most this time. And it's people sitting down and mocking the language that they use. So frame perfect, hitbox, wall hack or whatever, box trick. Just a lot of the terms that are said in basically everyone. And I think that it's affectionate ribbing, but at the same time, it's also these are basically sports people who are using the language of their sport in this thing to raise charity. It just, I think mostly it's affectionate, but sometimes it does seem a little bit harsh. And it's just can you let these people do what they're awesome at, please?
Yeah, I mean, it's anytime you ask someone who knows a lot about something, I mean, imagine how we sound to people who don't play games.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk about aesthetics or control schemes, there's basic terms that we think of as quite natural.
You know, and it's nothing fun. There's nothing wrong with poking a bit of fun, but, especially when they're doing it for charity, it's like...
I think my bigger problem with it is that the reason the people want to kind of poke fun at it is because they're getting a little bit irritated by hearing it over and over again.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about the jokes, about the things that they're irritated by. So if anything, I'm kind of a hypocrite by bringing it up at all.
I guess we all get annoyed at our own meta things.
Speedrunning is something that I think is a lot of fun to watch. And I think part of what's fun about watching it is it's very different from the typical gameplay experience for me. When I watch a Let's Play, I find it very try hard sometimes and very forced. And sometimes the commentary that people are discussing isn't very interesting. The Extra Credits team do a couple of Let's Plays that I find very, very cool because they talk about animation and level design and all of these kinds of things during the play. Whereas there are other things that are just like someone just nitpicking their way through the entire thing. Sure. And sometimes that's less interesting if the person isn't like that creative or funny about it. Yeah. And so like let's plays, there are good ones and there are bad ones is basically what I'm saying.
Whoa.
When it comes to speedrunning, it's so different to playing a game that there aren't little things that bother me about it. Like one of the things that bothers me about a typical Let's Play is when the person is playing the game badly. Like they're sitting there making their shitty jokes and not reading anything, and so they miss the obvious tutorial prompt that tells them how to get out of the room that they're stuck in. Just stuff that just makes you kind of want to shake the screen a little bit. Speedruns don't have that because those people are fucking monsters and they crush everything every step of the way.
That's because they're concentrating intensely.
Yeah, and the charisma side of things does suffer because they're concentrating so intently. Like sometimes the speedrunner themselves is so focused on what they're doing that they're not really being that charismatic.
This is why speedrunning needs commentators,
which is what GDQ does. Games Done Quick is what Games Done Quick does. They have like a stream and people make donations to get stuff read out, and like people make jokes, and it's a whole bunch of fun. And I think it's a cool event. So if you haven't seen it, check it out.
Have a look. You know, maybe
give some money to charity a little bit if you want
to. That could hardly hurt.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of games coming up this month.
Yeah.
That I think are kind of interesting. I think the first one that really pops out for me is something we've talked about a bit.
Yeah.
It's a game called Pyre.
Pyre.
Good. I did get that right.
this game that we're so excited for, really interested in, it's called Poke.
My brain.
No, it's called Pyre, my friend.
My brain wants to say Fire. Pyre. Pyre. It's by Supergiant.
Yeah.
Now they do what? Bastion, Transistor.
That's what they've done so far.
Oh, yeah. That's.
Those are the ones that people would know. Maybe they've done something else, but nobody knows. No, nobody cares. They've done Bastion, which everybody loved, Transistor, which was pretty good, and now this, which looks actually pretty good as well.
Yeah, looks interesting.
Yeah, they have a really great art style. Their Bastion obviously was famous for its dynamic narration.
Yes.
Which has probably been technologically superseded 100 times over since Bastion came out. But it was a great aesthetic mashup. It had a really good soundtrack. And the voice actor for the narrator is 80% of what made people impressed by it. Like, it's just absolutely great.
Wish that man narrated my life.
Yeah, Transistor was a little bit less polished.
Okay.
Like, it was going for a different whole, like a cyber noir kind of thing.
They mixed up the gameplay completely.
Yeah,
the gameplay
was very different. And the gameplay was actually quite good. I didn't mind that. But there was just a kind of a lack of a central through line on the plot that wasn't quite as solid as Bastion was in Transistor. It was very in medias res, and you don't really find out exactly what's happening until later on, and then like the character's motivation is never entirely clear, and then when the story is eventually explained, it doesn't super make sense. Like, I didn't actually know if I was the bad guy or not, and I didn't know if the bad guys wanted the thing to happen or wanted to stop the thing. If you don't know whether the bad guys are trying to make the world do something or make the world not do something, you don't actually know whether they're for or against on the issue of conflict.
That would make the narrative very difficult to follow.
Yeah, but they still had a lot of the artistic, like, virtuosity that they've expressed in Bastion in a different art style. And Pyre looks real fucking good.
Yeah, and the gameplay itself is like squad based. Yeah, it's like you have a team of like fire people, demons, and you fight each other. Like, what's going on?
From what I understand, you're a nomadic tribe, and each nomadic tribe has a spiritual orb. But when you come into conflict with other traveling tribes, your goal is to make sure that the orb is able to get into a specific zone on the map. And I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to, because I think it's very interesting.
Yep.
Of the people who have played demo testing, a consistent thing that comes up is that they play the game, they have a great deal of fun, and then like 5, 10, 15 minutes later, or maybe the next day or whatever, they think back on it and go, wait a minute, that was a sports game.
Oh, boy.
The game is presented in such a aesthetic way.
A fantasy
kind of way, and it's like it's a made-up sport, but the goal is get the ball to the goal.
Oh my god, this is making me more
team,
excited.
Right?
Yep.
But it's presented in such a beautiful way that a lot of people don't make that connection, and they're all like, the common thread is that people feel like they were tricked into playing a sports game. And that is so exciting to me. Like,
see, I love sports, right? And I've kind of secretly wanted to play more sports games in my life. I saw that FIFA and Madden were getting single player campaigns, and I was silently going, this looks interesting. But Pyre sounds like a great way to go.
The problem for me with sports games is about presentation and it's about pacing, right? So when you have a game like FIFA, what you're watching is a bunch of people play soccer, and that's not interesting to me, right? Like, even though you're theoretically playing and pressing the buttons or whatever, there's something very flat and consistent about the whole experience that's very hypnotic.
Yeah.
And that's not what I want to play. I don't want to play something that makes me kind of feel sleepy and feel
worn
out. And if that's what you like because you want to unwind, awesome. All power to you.
Or you could also see that and not feel the same way.
Yeah, like,
some people could see soccer and be
all
excited.
Yes, I'm so excited. And then do a goal and be all like, goal, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, my problem with it is that I feel like it bleeds sort of match to match to managing stuff to match to managing stuff to match. It all just kind of bleeds into one.
That's a problem that some games, like all different types of games,
have.
But I do
this
kind
is
of
what
get what
I feel about specifically FIFA and other sports games as an extension of
that. I can see why that would be.
A game that has a sports-style gameplay, but with a scripted narrative that has hopefully like thematic worth and aesthetic engagement and a whole bunch of like experimental stuff that's also interesting, it's finally like, yes, I can try out this cool mechanic in something that I don't find boring or don't find alienating. And so that's part of the reason I'm so excited for Pyre. And also, all you had to say to me was Supergiant's next game.
Yeah.
That's all I needed. Let's be honest.
They always make something that looks nice. Yeah. And plays well. And the other game is Splatoon 2.
Splatoon 2. So that's coming out later in July. I played the beta. I had so much fucking fun. Yes. And this is another great example of that thing that I just said about Pyre. It's a competitive shooter, which is just like, I kind of like the idea of playing it, but it's a competitive shooter, and there's like all the military shit and all of that kind of stuff.
Most shooters are very military
shit heavy. Yeah, and they have an aesthetic and like a community as well that I'm not really enthusiastic about participating in. But this is a competitive shooter that is very removed from a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And has a much more wholesome online community, or at the very least, doesn't automatically turn microphones on so you don't know that it's not a wholesome online community.
Yeah, that's the, I call that the Destiny effect.
Yeah.
Destiny came with no mic support the same way. Like, it turned off.
Yeah, yeah. Auto off. Yeah,
yes, auto. Which probably, as you say, hides the trash.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is it's very, very fast as well. Like, one of the things, I used to be really into League of Legends and stuff like that, and that's like you're committing 45 to 50 minutes to a match.
Yeah.
And I understand that most shooters are probably more in the 10 to 15 minute range.
Definitely.
This is in like the 4 to 5 minute range for a match. So it's very, very quick, and that just makes me a lot more enthusiastic about like, yeah, I can just whip out my Switch, punch out 2 or 3 matches. Like if I'm, let's say we get here, right, and I'm all like, oh, I'm here for the recording. And you're like, oh, hang on a second. I got to go handle
some business.
Business.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've got to fill out some paperwork.
That I didn't want to. Yeah. Okay, yes.
But well, for whatever reason, let's say I'm at a friend's house and they're all like, oh, shit, I got to have a shower before we head out or something. Yep. If I have their Wi-Fi password, I can play a fucking game of Splatoon 2. It's that quick and it's portable. That's a cool thing for a competitive shooter to be.
Let's see how Nintendo's netcode holds up in the real world.
Like I said, I played the beta.
And it was fine?
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with like latency or that. Obviously, it was a heavily staggered beta.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have trouble finding a game either.
Okay, that'd be interesting. See what the real world's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, see this here. This is the thing you put on this list. And I don't know why I'm excited because I haven't really played.
Yeah, okay. This is courtesy of Polygon. So okay. I should give credit to them because it sounds like we're being creative, but all I'm doing is really repackaging what they said.
Isn't that most of video game journalism?
Yeah, that's basically what news is. I remember I was at PAX and I was watching a presentation about different games journalists, basically. And one of the writers was saying that, like, okay, you know, there was like, what does your day look like as a games journalist? Like, so you normally I'll wake up, I'll start the day with news because news is easy, and that was like that surprises me. And she was talking about how, like, you know, so I'll jump online, I'll look around, I'll have a look at some things, and I'll write up some news articles, probably like 7 or 8 of those, and then I'll get out of bed. And I was like, cool, so that's insightful on what games journalism is. Because when she says news, that's what, I mean, what a lot of us think of as news. It's not news, it's press releases.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what she meant, right? When she said game news to me, I was expecting, like, yeah, so I'll start off by, like, investigating what happened between Hideo Kojima and Konami at the end of Metal Gear Solid 5. That's what I thought she meant when she said news. Like, I thought she meant investigative journalism.
Sure.
But what she meant was what we see on most sites, which is press releases and kitschy facts.
Well, you know, that being said, writing copy is a time-old tradition, even from the days of newspapers.
I am not trying to disparage this specific author or any person who works in this field, right? The reason the industry looks like that is because that's what most of us want. I just think that it's part of what dissatisfies me specifically about engaging with... That's why I'm not a regular games news reader, is because most of the time, I don't really care that something got a new DLC where you can... pay $5 and get a different colored hat.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
But that's like, at least one article like that will be on the front page of any news site that you see.
So speaking of Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, this is Shadow of Mordor that you wanted to talk about. I thought you were going to talk about the other thing.
Yeah, no, not the other. Oh, what's this other thing you got here?
I'll lead into the other thing because that's what encapsulates more what I'm talking about here. So apparently it was Ezio's birthday on the 24th of June.
No, it wasn't. Oh, Ezio's not a real person.
Oh, damn it. No.
It's not, he doesn't have a person.
I thought it was historical fiction.
No.
Oh, damn.
And he's fake.
So Ezio's not real.
Yeah. And the Apple of Eden isn't real either.
Okay.
The Knights of the Templars and the Assassins.
And Leonardo da Vinci is not real?
He's real, though.
See, but you can see why I'm confused,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I could see why you're confused.
And the Medicis, were they real or are they made up?
Listen, David, why the hell is this written down?
I don't know. I thought it was fun. I like Assassin's Creed 2. It was Ezio's birthday.
David, did you just turn us into a clickbait article?
Basically, yeah.
Oh, you monster.
Yeah, but no. Part of the reason that I put that there is, like I said, it was just such a perfect example of the difficulties I have preparing for these episodes. It's like, Ezio's birthday. I mean, it's kind of cool to know that, but at the same time, was it worth 300 words?
Can't visualize 300 words, so I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but no, you wanted to talk about the Shadow of Mordor Nemesis migration.
Yeah, because the Nemesis system in Shadow of Mordor, where you have those villains that get constructed by your actions in the game, is like the most interesting part of that.
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
By far is that the most interesting part.
Of that Assassin's Creed / should have been a Batman game.
Yeah. So... this, I forget who said this as well, but I agree with it, that Shadow of Mordor and Lord of the Rings,
yes,
are terrible matches for each other. Like, that style of game and that intellectual property are a terrible match for each other, and both IPs kind of suffered for mixing it. I think it would have worked much better as a Games Workshop. That would be the perfect fit for it.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
That would have been perfect if it was like a Warhammer type setting.
Yeah.
Or Star Wars, you could do a half interesting story in Star Wars if it was like you were playing a Sith.
Yeah, I don't know if this is actually hearsay, but I do remember reading that it was originally going to be a Batman game. And
oh,
it was
okay.
Batman fighting the Joker's army. And it was going to
he like intimidates them into doing what he wants.
And he uses Scarecrow's fear gas to mind control them and stuff.
That's pretty dark.
That's what I heard. I don't remember where that article came from or where I read that piece of information.
Yeah.
But that would be really cool.
It might not have been like the original plan, but it is a cool sounding suggestion.
But then the company that produced it was like, no, it's now Lord of the Rings because The Hobbit's coming out.
Yeah, and look, it works, right? But every time you hear an orc say something, it's like, that's right out of Warhammer, though, isn't it? That's not a Lord of the Rings orc.
But having the Nemesis migration is just like, people love that system. And so having that support in the new game is a great idea.
Yeah, so maybe I should clarify what this is, because I read this article and you didn't,
yes,
right?
Yes, because I mean...
So what you're able to do is the Nemesis system is going to feature in both games regardless. That was always true, right? But you're able to... migrate your highest ranking
villain,
nemesis villain, like one who's against you,
bad dude,
and your highest ranking like controlled ally,
Oh,
right. Okay. So two orcs, exactly two, can migrate into your new game.
Okay.
So it's like,
that took a little bit of the fun out of it.
But I, at the same time, I kind of saw that, and I saw Nemesis Migration, and my first thought was the whole roster, and I'm like, isn't the whole point that it's randomly generated and new and interesting though? And so I think that like the two highest makes more sense than the whole roster, because it's like you get a sense of continuity there.
Yeah.
But you are still able to, whatever improvements they've made to that system and whatever they've done.
Yeah, it can be leveraged better in the new game.
You will have new, interesting stuff that you wouldn't have seen before, and you'll still get that in there.
Totally.
I'm probably going to play Shadow of War at some point. There is a giant orc you've probably seen in the trailers called Bruz the Chopper, I think his name is.
Yes, and fan favorite.
Yeah, he is... He's just a big Aussie, is what that is. Clearly modeled after Chopper Reed.
That's amazing. You know? Chopper Reed the orc, that I want to see.
I think he actually does have nicks in his ears as well, which is all like a big reference to that. But yeah, that'll be fun. The voice actor's doing a good job in the stuff that I've seen.
I mean, those orcs were always great.
Yeah. They were the high point of the thing. Talion or whatever his name is... where they got a knockoff Mark Strong who's just, like, doing okay.
He does a really solid action hero.
Yeah, and, like, they've got the whole... like, the way they interact with the lore is a little bit like... like Celebrimbor becomes a wraith. It's like, what the hell is that all about?
Who knows?
But, yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to play Shadow of War, but Shadow of Mordor is on our list coming up, so...
Oh, yes, spoilers for our list.
Yeah, spoilers for our list. So, yeah, I mean, you'll probably get some use out of that. I doubt I'll go back to... Shadow of Mordor in a full sense, just to try and get the most out of that Nemesis system for Shadow of War. Sure. But yeah, it's a fun game. So we'll it's cool that like if people who want to have a little bit of continuity there can have it.
I always like when it's there. You know, that's what I'm looking for with the Mass Effect games. That's what I love about all those kind of games, the Dragon Age ones, the choices. Witcher
games. And this is nowhere near as robust as anything in like The Witcher or in any of the Mass Effect games. But it is. You know.
It's something
that gives you a carryover. We'll see how it
goes. Yeah. So, that's cool. Is that all we have time for?
Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps us up. Yep. If you would like to hear more of our stuff, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or head to our website, slowpokespodcast.com, which will have every kind of link there, as well as like our RSS if you want to subscribe on your Android-based podcatcher.
Yeah, we'll have our YouTube page as well there, so you can also watch any of our videos that we've...
Yeah, our Let's Plays. As this is released, there'll be two more left to go up
until dawn.
But that's going pretty well, and it's fun editing the tail end of that, because that's where all of the stuff starts to really open up, and like you get a lot of answers to some of the mysteries and things.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, and it just gets a much punchier and much more engaging compared to some of the slower middle sections. So that's cool if you want to see that.
Yeah.
If you want to get at either of us, you can head to Twitter, at SlowpokesCast, or Facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast.
Yep.
Hit us up, let us know about all the stuff that you wanna chat about, and we're always glad to hear from y'all and get involved in a good old chat.
I just realized we forgot to ask for questions. so if you want to send us a question for next time,
you should totally hit us up. 2 weeks from this one.
Hit us up at those places, and we'll answer those questions.
Yeah, any less work I have to do trolling through Ezio's birthdays and DLC announcements. Is a big thumbs up for me.
You're gonna do this every week, every fortnight? Are you gonna bring up another video game character's birthday?
Maybe that'll be our thing. Not that many of them have explicit birthdays. That's part of the reason they brought it up on Polygon. It's just like, weirdly, Assassin's Creed is very specific about when Ezio is born.
Must have to do something to do with aliens.
Yep, and apples.
And apples. That's all I know about Assassin's Creed.
Don't see the movie. that's it. Thanks very much for joining us. Our next episode will be...
Pony Island and Superhot.
We
put two games together.
Crushing it. Double times for two games. Get the double dose of Slowpoke's goodness.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pony Island and Superhot, both very interesting games for a couple of very different reasons.
Yeah.
So yeah, look forward to that. That's going to be a fun one.
Totally. All right. Well, we'll see you next time on the Fastcast. Slow.